Hi, everyone. Welcome to Childcare Inspirations, inspiring early childhood educators and providers through laughter, learning, and connection. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Childcare Inspirations, Voices from the Field. And I'm here today with Shirley and Robin, and we are going to share with you some memorable moments of inspirations and really, you know, just sharing why we're in this field and what kind of grabbed us and stuck with us over all these years. So today it is all about sharing our inspiration and sharing our stories. So we're just going to talk about like some of the things, your first aha moment and what that was. So for me, I remember the moment I knew this was a field for me is it was my end of my first year teaching in Taiwan. And I was teaching toddlers, 24 of those little ones. And I remember this little girl, she came up to me and we were supposed to assess them to see if they were ready to go to preschool. And yes, we had to assess them. This was what you did about almost 20 years ago is you assessed the toddlers, which was really weird. But I couldn't tell because she was nonverbal in English and Chinese. And she didn't do any of the worksheets or the activities. Yes, we had worksheets for toddlers. Drove me nuts. But we had worksheets for toddlers, but she wouldn't engage in any activity. She was completely happy. She would run, she would play. But any of the more academic things that we were supposed to assess them on to see how they're going to do in preschool and move them forward, we had no clue. In her verbal skills were, we didn't know what she was understanding. And so I remember specifically the moment I was sitting at my desk because they were having Chinese class. And I was sitting at my desk and she comes up to me and she tugs on this shoulder. She tugs my shirt and she goes, Miss Tina, I can spell cat, C-A-T. And then she started reciting the alphabet. And I started like tears streaming down my eyes because this whole time she was absorbing absolutely every single little thing. And she might not have been verbal or speaking at that point, but she was observing everything. And this is when I realized what we do matters. And that relationship that I built with her, that she finally felt comfortable to come and talk. And then afterwards, she was like the chatty Cathy. She would not be quiet. She was very, very verbal afterwards, but she chose her own time to express herself through speaking. And that's when I realized what I do matters. And what the interactions, the relationships we have. This is why I'm not in architecture anymore, is because this is so much more rewarding and I feel it's so much more powerful. And that's the moment that I realized I wanted to continue on my pathway of being an early childhood educator because of that little girl. That's where it all started for me. Oh, I'm going to choke up again.
They do that, right? They absorb and they absorb and they absorb and you don't know what they're seeing or what they're learning. And it's like, you know, even if you have your own kids and the same thing happens, you think, no, nobody's listening. And then, you know, 3 days later, they come back with everything that you had given them and you think, oh my goodness, I can't believe you absorbed that. You know, it's pretty powerful.
And at that time, we didn't have the concept of mighty learner. But now that I can reflect, at that time, I realized how mighty children are and how capable and competent they are. And it might not be in the time frame that adults think they should be, but she's a rock star. She did it on her own, in her own way, her own manner, her own time. It doesn't mean she wasn't a mighty learner. It means she embraced who she was and she chose that path. So that really brings back in reflection, I just thought of that right now, that wow, that was my first real moment of realizing how amazing children can be.
Yeah. I think for me, I had those moments early on in my career, but I had kind of strayed a little bit and gone and done other things and stuff. And then when I had come back to doing children's programming in preschool and stuff, the moment I had was actually with my daughter that empowered me. She was in grade 3 And she came home from school one day, super mad at me, so mad at me. And I'm like, what's going on? Like, what did I do? And she's crying and she's upset. And it took me a long time to get out of her. And she said to me, Mom, it's not fair. You talk to us like we're people. She said, no one else talks to us like we're people. And I was like, wow, that was so powerful to me, because I knew then that what we did in early childhood and what I had done with them as children was the important part. She was empowered enough to realize when somebody was not being respectful. And I was empowered to know that somebody has to and somebody ought to talk to children like they're people and respect them as whole people at every age, and not just when they're what you think is all grown up. You know, that was my recommittal moment when I thought, this matters. What we do when they're little really matters. And maybe we don't see it right away, but you're going to see it in their growth and their development later. She's an adult now, and she's a very competent, strong, smart, capable woman. And part of that, I think, is because you grew up in an environment where you were allowed to be a person.
See, this is, I'm going to probably need some tissue. I'm probably going to cry. This is what happens even when you become an educator. You embrace your emotions. But yeah, you never know. I like how you said that, Robin, is that you never know when they're going to showcase everything we've done with them in the early years. We don't really know the impact. We have all this research and all these ideas and theories of what will happen, and we've seen the research of longitudinal studies, but to experience it yourself is a completely different thing.
Yeah.
And it makes those years of stress, of low pay, of long hours, and that dedication we put in with our heart, mind, body, and soul, like it, those are your moments where like, this is why I do what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Two situations that I can think of actually aren't with children directly, but because of what I do, it has impacted some adults working in the field and in elementary education. I have a educator friend who is in admit now, but was one of my children's teachers a few years ago. And she has told me fairly recently that it was because of the things she sees me do with the children, that she's implementing loose parts and outdoor ed at her school, which is elementary, which is really cool.
That's really significant. That's
because even those older children need those types of that type of play, right? Like, so that was pretty cool. And then I had another educator from California actually leave a review on my business page a couple of years ago, and how she was very discouraged because she was trying to do play-based and get her families, you know, to buy into it. And she said, after showing them some of the stuff I do, they've now bought in. And it's encouraged her to keep going, not to give up.
I really like that, Shirley. I really like that you're using an example of the community of educator to educator and the community of the adults who are supporting these children. And, you know, it's something I don't know if when preparing for this podcast, I'm not sure that I thought a lot about that level of influence, but it really is significant too. I can think of, you know, several things throughout my career that you're like, yeah, I made a difference there and I helped somebody and I, you know, and I grow. And I mean, I work with a really fantastic room partner now, and we back and forth and back and forth. And you really shouldn't take for granted the fact that you are learning from each other and that you're supporting each other, and that that makes you better with the children and that makes you a better educator. So yes. I think that's pretty significant.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of aha and inspiration that I've had over the years with children, but I think those situations where I was able to influence adults to see the value of what I do or what we do is even more significant, because they're going to use that and in their work
That's why I love working with educators, right? Because you're, it's that inspiration. And I agree, Robin. I was like, okay, we'll come in and we'll share all our moments of what are aha moments with children. But I love that, like looking beyond that. And it makes me think about, okay, what about with families?
Yeah.
And I remember this one educator I worked with. So I was her coach and she was just a sponge. She still is. She's an amazing educator. And I remember when I opened my own business and when I met with her and she got a promotion to be my replacement. So Sheena was now a coach. And I remember meeting her and she was crying. She goes, "You've inspired me. Like I couldn't have gotten here without your mentorship and your coaching." And she was literally in tears and overwhelmed, which put me in tears and overwhelmed. Cause I'm just saying, I'm just coaching and mentoring. Like, this is just something that we do as educators to support each other, whether it's your role or not. I think it's really important that we do form these communities of inspiration. I like calling it that.
I like
because
that.
It is about inspiring. You like that,
yeah.
Robin?
Community, I like that. Yeah.
Inspiration that instead of communities of practice. Yeah.
Put it on a t-shirt.
I know. Put it on another t-shirt. But that's what it's about, right? We're getting together not only to learn from each other, but to feel inspired by each other. And I think I'm hoping we do that more than we know.
I think with COVID, it's been very difficult this last 2 years. Even where we are not allowed to have a staff meeting together. You're just with your room partner in your room. And then the presenters go from room to room and I guess repeat themselves 7 times or whatever. But like we are not a community in networking that way, even in those situations. And then you're not supposed to mingle in the hallway and you're not supposed to mingle in the staff room. And you're not, you know, like all of this kind of stuff, which it makes it really difficult. One of the centers I was at had an excellent sort of texting app and everybody could read the feed. So you could be like, "Hey, is it muddy outside? Hey, did you have an idea for this? Hey, did you," and people could talk back and forth. And it was really empowering to be like, "Maybe I didn't see you today, but I heard from you today. And I know that you were making cupcakes because you said something about making cupcakes. And I thought, wow, that's a great idea. Let's do that." Or they would talk about the children and be like, "Oh, I need help. You know, like, can anybody give me an idea for this?" Or, you know, it was really sort of a back and forth. And I thought, well, that's very fantastic to use technology to kind of combat what COVID has taken away from us, you know? Yeah. So not in my current center doesn't do that, but it certainly is something that I think people have had to be creative in order to make a community and to make sure we can still connect, you know, all your Zoom calls and your podcasts and your, you know, that kind of stuff, because it really took away from us a lot of your in-person events and workshops and networking things. Well, and to learn from each other, like Shirley was saying, you know, we get such good ideas from each other. And I find educators typically are pretty good with sharing ideas and, you know, and saying, "Hey, I did this and it was great," or "I did this and it didn't work out," or, you know, like, I think we're pretty good at sharing that. And when you don't have a means to share that, it's hard to support each other.
Especially here in Alberta with day homes. Right? Because we're so isolated. We don't have a room partner or whatever to bounce ideas off of. To have that online way of connecting is vital.
Yeah. What about your aha moments with families? Like, can you recall a moment with families that you're like, "Wow, this is why I do what I do"?
I think for me, early on, I taught preschool in a small community. So I don't think this would be possible necessarily in a big community, but the group that I had in preschool, when they graduated high school, one of the moms from the parent committee contacted me and invited me to come. And it was pretty emotional for me because they were one of my first groups that I had. They weren't the very first, but they were one of the first groups, and to see them grow. You know, and you were able to keep contact because, like I said, it's a small community. So you run into people and you can stay in contact and you can, you know, it's a little bit different, I think, than if you're in a larger center. But that for me was really impactful. I thought, you know, it made a difference to these families enough that they reached out to me and said, "You know, you were important in part of this process and we want to celebrate." And that was pretty special to me. I'll remember that for a long time.
Yeah. Aww.
Yeah, I had recently actually a parent contacted me through social media just to say how she found me on social media. And she's like, yeah, my child still talks about you like almost daily. And she's not, she just turned 9. And I had her from the time she was, oh, she was about 11 months old till she was almost 6. So, I mean, she was with me for a significant amount of time, but the fact that she's still, you know, she talks about how she did this and this and this at Shirley's and, you know, yeah. And I've had another parent a couple of years ago. The child had been with me, I don't know, about 6 months maybe, and was notoriously challenging at home for eating. But I was able to get that kid to eat pretty much everything. He had a few things that he still wouldn't touch with the 10-foot pole. But, you know, mom was very happy that whatever I was doing was working.
I had a incident this week that was pretty impactful. I had done a learning story for one of the girls in my room. And I had given it to her dad, and it was all nice with photos and words, and, you know, it was all beautiful. And in the morning, I handed it to him and didn't think anything of it. And he came at the end of the day and he went, "Robin." And I went, "Yeah, what did I do?" Because I thought I was a joke. He's like, "You made me cry." He goes, "I sat in the car and I read what you wrote and you made me cry." And he said, "I sent it to my mom and I sent it to my sister and I sent it to my wife and I sent it to," you know, and it was so important to me to have a response. Sometimes we do those things for parents and you get a, "Oh, thanks." And you don't know if it makes a difference for them at all. But he was so impressed with what I had said about how his daughter had learned and what she was doing. And it was a sort of a cooking dramatic play. And he looked at me and he was like, "She cooks with me at home." And it was really personal to him to see that she was carrying that forward into our preschool room, you know? So that to me was really encouraging and really inspiring that he was impacted by that and he was excited about it. So that was a nice connection. It is what's important. And that's what, you know, a lot of what flight is the practice of relationships and building relationships and honoring relationships and creating relationships and learning from relationships. And, you know, if you go through, I've read that book probably 50 times by now with all the classes and stuff that I've taken, you know, I've gone through it. It's all tabbed up and everything. And almost everything is about relationships, connections and relationships. You know, that's what you're trying to make. I don't like that they call it a curriculum, because I think curriculum gives a different connotation that it's going to be like teach this, teach this, teach this. But I don't know what else they could have called it. Maybe just framework is a good word, but it is all about relationships. And that's why I like it. And that's why I value what it has taught me. It kind of has validated all of those stories and went, This, you're doing the right thing. This is what you're doing. This is important. You know, and that feels really good to know, okay, we're on the right track here.
Absolutely. It's that confirmation of, whew, this is what we're meant to do. This is our passion and we have this drive and we have our purpose. But the big thing for me is the passion. I always say, we don't do this because we like children. There's lots of people who like children, but cannot do what we do.
No.
Well, my room partner and I were talking when I was talking about doing this podcast. And so we were bouncing ideas back and forth. What do you think? What would be your moment and stuff? And I kind of took a different approach, is that at some point I realized that the care portion of early childhood education was just as important as the education portion. So if they took 25 minutes to zip their own snowsuit, that was just as important as getting outside on your outside time timeline. And the care portion of changing a bum or wiping a nose or serving a meal or cleaning up a spill or wiping tears because they're crying over spilled something, you know, that's just as important as what you've programmed and what you've put in. And I don't know that I thought that at the beginning. I mean, I've been doing this since the 90s. It's been a long time. And I don't think that's what I felt. I thought, oh, we got to get this done so we can do the important stuff. you know? Yep. And when I finally got to the point, I don't really know what made me realize it or what impressed me enough that I understood it, but I eventually evolved into understanding that this is just as an important part of this job as anything else you do in this job.
I can just picture Carol right now and that illuminated care going,
just thinking about that.
I can just picture her doing book. Like a little cheer here.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, was there, maybe Tina or Robin, was there a moment, an aha moment in your practice that changed? Like, was there a moment that, like, for me, I have a couple significant moments where it was like, oh, yeah, that practice can, we're not going to do that anymore. Like, yeah. I had one where we were toilet training an older child who should have been trained by this age, and we were using stickers to reward. And I was only in the field, oh gosh, at that point, probably about 3 or 4 years, maybe. And we, as a staff, had decided that we were going to move beyond stickers at that point, because he was doing okay. And he, this one particular day, just wasn't having it, and he wanted a sticker, and we said no, and he proceeded to pee right there in the middle of the room. And it's like, yeah, okay, we're done with stickers, because it's obviously not like connecting, right? It wasn't working. And it was the same with using stickers, same program. We're using stickers to entice the kids, the children, to help us clean.
We did that too. I had,
and it was, it got to the point where the children didn't care anymore. And it's like, okay, why are we using this practice if it's not, you know, working? Yeah. It's not helping them understand the importance of, you know, keeping a safe walking path or whatever. Like, I've changed my ideas about cleanup and stuff over the years, but yeah, at that point I was like, there's no point in using them.
Yeah.
I found the more I read, the more I learned, especially about the psychology and the neuroscience. That's my geekiness, right?
Yeah.
But the more I read, and not just through formal education like courses and schooling, but a lot of informal and reading different perspectives, and then being able to apply it and test out those theories and those concepts. For me, once I understood, especially with behaviors, once I understood what was happening in the brain, I felt I could connect better and I could understand, and I had more patience, and I stopped doing the sticker routines.
Yeah.
And I tried different things, but it was really a mindset, because if you don't believe it's going to work, it won't work. So it was a mindset switch, is this is going to work. And I think that for me, that was when I started changing my practices. The more I learned, even now, I mean, I'm revising a bunch of workshops because the practices are outdated. Mm-hmm. And it's not like this is new stuff. It's like what we're talking about. It's just what we did in implementation in real life was different.
Yeah.
And I find now we're going more and more towards those care practices is equally important, and valuing children as, you know, individuals and authentic, mighty learners.
I think for me, the biggest aha moment was somewhere in something, some important person that I have forgotten, which, you know, never sounds good, said to me, is this an adult problem or is this a child problem? And when I reframed everything like circle time and went, yes, is this an adult practice or a child practice? And I went, sitting still with your legs crossed and your hands in your lap, definitely an adult practice, right? This is not what they want to do. And then I took baby steps. So the first step was, you can sit however you want at circle time, because that was the first step, right? Like, loosened it up a little, but I still had a bit of that adult practice, you know. And it's taken me a long time to be okay with letting it go and being like, is this really a problem for the child or is this a problem for me? And what I find though is I get pushback, I think, from other coworkers and from staff and stuff, of people like, well, you're not doing something about this. You're not doing that. You're not doing this. You're not doing that. And it's like, but I don't feel like I need to, because this child is sorting out what he's doing, or this child is experiencing something, and I don't feel like I necessarily need to put my adult influence on that. So it was a change in practice for me, but a little bit of an uncomfortable one, because it's been a slow moving process to changing to child-centered practice versus mm-hmm. adult-centered practice.
Especially when you get that external influences and people telling you, oh, you're not doing it right, and you're not being an educator if you don't do this. It's like, and how do you change that mindset of other people? We can't change the mindset of other people. We can just show them the benefits and of what we do and the connections that we build. And hopefully people will be like, okay, that is very amazing what they're doing. And they're getting even better results and better connections than what I've done in my practices. And man, we've grown. It's not like we came out and started our first year working with children and we're amazing and did everything correct and had all these, you know, wonderful, wonderful things. No, we work through this stuff.
The podcast, The Early Childhood Nerd, that one, had, I hope I don't quite quote it wrong, but she had a podcast that was, do you have 30 years experience?
Or
1 year, 30 times, basically, right? Like, are you doing the same thing every year? Or are you doing something new and something different as time goes on? But the premise I got from that was it has to evolve based on the children and the families. And you also change too. So taking, she called it the March laminated box, because she was talking about people that just have resources for 10 years, right? That
sounds like
Lisa Murphy. Taking that and applying it to new
people. It was Lisa Murphy.
Yeah. You know, so it was-
Yeah, it was Lisa and Heather talking about that, right?
That's was an important thing to think about. Like, are we doing the same thing for my benefit? Again, is it adult-centered? Is it teacher-centered? Or is it child-centered? Is it really the kids in my room right now? Or was it the kids in my room 3 years ago when I really had fun with this idea? Right? Like, am I really responding to the people, these little people in front of me? Or am I just doing what, you know, I came up with and I don't want to come up with something new?
And this just goes to show, like, we can read all this stuff that we're discussing in a book or in a textbook, but when you actually have that conversation with other people and you connect with people, that's when I think the learning actually happens. You have that base knowledge that you read and that you're tested on and you have to do assignments on. But then when you talk with other educators who, you know, are on that growth journey, that's when we really start to reflect.
And I think for me, getting that, hearing those things from different, you know, educators over the years, going back to something you said, Robin, one of the things that I learned a few years ago from Dan Hodgins was not to make moral issues out of developmental ones.
I like that a lot. Yeah.
And when I first heard it, I was like, I don't know. Like, I was uncomfortable with it.
Yeah. But it is uncomfortable.
That's what he did. He made you uncomfortable, but he made you think.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I mean, I'm glad I learned it, because it's changed the way I do things, along with other things I've learned. But that particular quote has stuck with me.
Yeah. As an exercise for a class I was taking, I had to come up with my educator mission statement. What is your mission statement? What do you stand for? What do you want to do? And I actually found it harder to put in 5 or 6 sentences what my intent is. And everybody said, well, put what you're going to do. That's not what it meant. Put what your intent is. What is your intent when you're working with children? What is your intent when you're working with families? Why are you doing what you're doing? You know, that kind of a mission statement. It was actually harder than I thought, but I think it's a valuable exercise for people to stop and think, not just, well, I'm going to make this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to take this course and I'm going to this, but, you know, what is your intent? I want to inspire. I want to encourage. I want to help grow. I want to keep children healthier, you know, whatever your goals are. They come from your aha moments. They come from the moments throughout your career where you went, that's why I do what I do, you know, and it's very personable or personable. And I think it's a valuable thing for people to do.
And I think it's something that we need to do on a regular basis, just because you do it mm-hmm. once.
Yes.
I think reflect on this on a regular basis, every 3, 4, 6 months. Just really ask yourself, what is my purpose? Yeah. What are my goals? What are my, I like that, intentions. Yeah. And just to help you continue growing. I mean, we get into the rut when we've been in the field for a while. Sometimes we'll get into the rut of, oh my goodness, what else can I learn? And what I've come to realize is so much. And if we get mm-hmm. stuck in that mindset, oh, I've done that. I've taken that guiding behavior workshop. I've taken enough of those. Then we want to evaluate, well, have we lost our purpose? Have we lost our drive? And how? What can we do to re-spark that and help us keep seeing those aha moments and reflect on those moments and really want to keep going and inspire?
It is important to think about those things, and we get bogged down in the day-to-day of running, and we're busy. We don't sit down. Like we were joking the other day at dinner with a bunch of ladies that I work with, and it's like, you know, did you sit down more than one time today? Did you, you know, like we're really busy. And so when you get home, you're tired, and finding that time, that mental strength to say, I'm going to really stop and think about this is really a difficult thing. And I think as a profession, we need to do better in supporting educators in their professional journey, as well as in the playroom and as well as with the children, so that you are like a well-rounded and healthy educator. You know, I don't think we support enough time and space for people to grow that way, because we're all just really tired at the end of the day.
Absolutely. And that's why I think it's a BC, they have the new early childhood ethics, code of ethics, mm-hmm. and they just added two more components. And one of those components is educator well-being and looking at the educator as a whole person. I mean, we are driven, okay, look at the child as a whole person. Well, what about educators?
Yeah,
and giving
fabulous.
Us that time and that space and that connection to grow yeah. holistically. And like you said, Robin, not just in the classroom.
Yeah.
So I hope everyone listening in and following along is reflecting on their own aha moments and I've nodded their heads and disagreed with us as we've talked and kind of shared in the laughter, maybe a few tears that you can share with me as I was tearing up here, because it's really important to remember your ahas and find your passion and find your drive and your purpose, because this is what it's all about. This is what it's all about. Well, thank you, Shirley and Robin, for joining me once again in our Voices from the Field. I think this is our little community of inspiration, because we often talk and then we'll get off topic and then we'll bring it back. And I really appreciate the connection that I have with you. So thank you so much for joining me again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll see everyone next month for our next Voices from the Field. Have yourself a sunshine day, everyone. Bye.